This is a free Off The Ball podcast. For access to the best in sporting analysis from the likes of Brian O'Driscoll, Andy Dunn, Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Tommy Walsh, Darren O'Sullivan and lots more, become an Off The Ball member today.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off The Ball's Football Daily.
Welcome along to Wednesday's Football Daily. I'm Phil Egan. Coming up today, Troy Parrott makes his Real Betis debut in their win away to Valencia. Celtic are dumped out of the Champions League after letting a 4-goal lead slip against LASK. And Nathan Collins scores 2 for Brentford in the second round of the EFL Cup. But first today, Ireland international Troy Parrott came off the bench to play a 20-minute cameo in his first appearance for Real Betis, who beat Valencia 1-0 at the Mestalla in La Liga. Parrott almost scored within a minute of coming on, but he did play a key role in Pablo Garcia's winner in the 83rd minute. Betis have now won their opening 2 games in the league and will be back to Valencia this weekend to play Levante. Parrott became the 11th Irishman to play in Spain's top division. Celtic boss Martin O'Neill says it's majorly disappointing to have blown a 4-goal lead to lose 5-4 on aggregate to LASK in their Champions League playoff. The Scottish champions went into the second leg in Austria with a 3-0 lead. They were firmly in the driving seat when Callum McGregor put them 1-0 up on the night in the 21st minute. But the Austrian champions pulled the goal back before the break and then got another 3 in the second half to force extra time. LASK scored again to win 5-1 on the night. They even missed a penalty. O'Neill says it's a dark day for his side.
I would accept the responsibility that is down to me, regardless of whatever you think it might be, whether it's tactics, whether it's a fitness. And from the position that we were in, we shouldn't even have been going into extra time.
With Celtic now missing out on a major financial windfall for not qualifying for the Champions League proper, O'Neill admits it could impact their ability to strengthen the squad.
Qualification for the Champions League is major. It's really major. It's major in every aspect. It is for financially for the football club. It is for prestige for all of us. We want to try and qualify. Being in the Europa League, scant consolation. But we have to pick ourselves up.
Elsewhere in the Champions League last night, Sabah of Azerbaijan came from behind to beat Hapoel Beersheba 6-4 on aggregate. Bodø/Glimt beat NEC Nijmegen 6-1 to book their place in the league phase once again. 4 more games tonight. AEK Athens take on Levski Sofia. Lyon play Fenerbahce. Celje are up against Slovan Bratislava. And Viking take on Dinamo Zagreb. Those ties are all level going into the second legs. Meanwhile, Chelsea will kick off their bid to qualify for the Women's Champions League tonight. The WSL side are at home to Real Sociedad for the first leg of their third round tie. Chelsea had won 6 titles in a row before last season when Manchester City ended that run. In the EFL Cup last night, Keith Andrews' Brentford won 6-1 away to Birmingham. Ireland defender Nathan Collins scored 2 of the goals. Leeds beat Nottingham Forest for the second time in 4 days. This time it was a 2-0 win at the City Ground. Daniel Farke had beaten Forest 1-0 there on Saturday in the Premier League.
The momentum can change pretty quickly. We are there with a really good first week so far, but we also want to make sure that we're ready for the weekend. And for that, I'm not too carried away. I want to keep going with my boys and then to celebrate and to be overexcited when there is a reason for this. But at the moment, just early stages.
Some of the other results last night saw Brian Barry Murphy's Cardiff City lose 2-1 to Norwich and Hull beat Stoke on penalties. Newcastle boss Matthias Jeisler says he intends to treat the League Cup as a serious competition. Newcastle lifted the trophy in 2025 under Eddie Howe, ending the club's wait for a first major domestic trophy since 1955. Jeisler's side take on West Brom tonight. Despite the German admitting some of his players are exhausted after their dramatic 2-2 draw at Liverpool on Sunday.
First of all, it's a big competition due to the history of the club. We are aware of that and I'm looking forward already to play that round.
Everton boss David Moyes says he'll have plenty of fond memories on his return to Preston tonight in the second round. He enjoyed a spell as a player and a manager at Deepdale. And Moyes has praised club legend Tom Finney for the impact he had on his career.
He says, they would try and kick me and I would just ride the tackle. And it was as if none of it bothered him. He had an answer to whatever the defenders were going to do against him. And he was great that way and probably didn't see him play a few clips, but I was too young. He was a great man.
Tottenham boss Roberto De Zerbi says Spurs have to get a winning mentality quickly and it needs to start against Charlton in the League Cup tonight. Spurs spent over £300 million this summer, but they were beaten 3-0 by Brentford on Saturday in their Premier League opener. Zerbi says things will improve.
We have to find the condition to become team quickly. We started the project right now, not last season. Last season, we fought to stay up. And this season, it started to become better. It's not like this. Maybe, I hope. I want.
The other game tonight sees Burnley take on Bradford away from home. Now in transfer news, Manchester City have completed the signing of Morocco international Ayoub Bouadi from Lille. The 18-year-old will cost them the region of €100 million, which makes him the most expensive teenager in Premier League history. The midfielder who played at the World Cup has agreed a 5-year deal with City. One player close to an exit from City is Omar Marmoush. Tottenham are close to completing a deal for the Egypt international. An agreement's been reached for a season-long loan and there's an obligation to buy him for up to £60 million next year. Crystal Palace striker Jean-Philippe Mateta looks set to move to Aston Villa. The Europa League champions have made Crystal Palace an offer for the France striker, but it's believed it's a long way off what Palace are looking for. A departure that could finance Mateta's move would be that of Ollie Watkins, the England international, and his interest from Saudi club Al-Hilal, and he would cost in the region of £60 million. Villa are close to agreeing the move and it's understood Watkins would have an annual salary of £12 million. On Tuesday's Off the Ball Breakfast, Aston Villa podcast host Ty Bracey joined Colin Buick and End a Call and said that Watkins has damaged his relationship with the Villa faithful.
I get it. I have no problem if you can create generational wealth for your family. I get it. But don't refuse to train and play to push a move. If a club comes in for the figure that we want, then go with our blessing. Jack Grealish knew when Jack Grealish was leaving. He knew he had a release clause. We didn't know at the time. He knew Man City were coming in to hit, trigger that release clause. He was professional enough to stay and train until that bid came in. And then he said his farewells. He's not sat at home having family barbecues, which has come out that his wife's sister had been posting on Instagram of him at some family barbecue while we're all pulling our hair out, losing 4-0 after 31 minutes to Brighton. It's not acceptable.
Yeah. What happens next?
I mean, it looks like the exit's going to happen. But for me, I think the bridges are burned. If I would have no problem if he wants to leave. I understand that amount of money can, you know, look after you and your family and your kids for the next few generations. It's generational wealth. But for me, that's bridges burned. He didn't need to do that to get a move. All Al-Hilal needed to do was spend the money that we wanted and he went, he'd go with my blessing and I'd be grateful for his service at Villa. But for me, once he's gone, that's it. There's no memory of Ollie Watkins in my head.
Wow. Yeah, because he's the all-time top scorer in the Premier League for Aston Villa.
He is. Yeah, he is. And that's what makes it even more difficult because I have defended Watkins relentlessly when he's had those dry spells and said he'll come good. There's no bigger critic than Ollie Watkins when he's going through a bad time. And if that's his opinion of the team that have paid his wages for 6 years, where you're like, no, I'm not going to train, all the best, mate.
And remember, you can listen to Off the Ball Breakfast each and every weekday morning from 7:30 on the Go Loud app and on YouTube. Former England international Raheem Sterling has been charged with dangerous driving and possession of nitrous oxide after a crash involving a Lamborghini in the motorway, police have said. The charges followed a single vehicle collision of May of this year. The 31-year-old is accused of dangerous driving, possession of nitrous oxide for wrongful inhalation, and failing to provide a specimen. No other vehicles were involved in the collision and no injuries were reported. Sterling is due to appear in court for the hearing on the 15th of September. Yesterday on the football show, Owen Sheehan was joined in studio by Miguel Maduro, the former chairman of the FIFA Governance Committee and its Independent Review Committee. They talked about the current state of FIFA and its governance over football under current president Gianni Infantino. Here, Maduro explains that even if Infantino is removed from the role, without proper reform, football governance won't change.
But if Infantino makes it to the election next year, which looks increasingly likely at this point, and then subsequently loses that election, the person who has defeated him will become FIFA president in the current infrastructure and surely will be in favour of preserving the status quo.
He will be the same as Infantino.
Exactly. So who instigates this change? How does this change that you outline happen?
It has to be instigated from the outside. I think...
By the EU? By the Swiss government?
I think the European Union... The Swiss government has no interest. And if they will have interest, they will have no way of effectively doing it, because what will happen is that FIFA will move to a country that will not... impose that on them. I mean, there's a reason why in the latest FIFA statutes amendment, they've taken out that the seat needs to be in Switzerland. So now they can decide at any moment in time that they move their seat. And that was a clear message to Switzerland, because the public pressure in Switzerland towards stronger regulation of the sports governing bodies, including FIFA, was increasing. So I think FIFA wanted to convey a message that if you go ahead and you try to regulate us, we move and we go somewhere else.
But if the EU sink their teeth into them, they'll just move to Doha.
Yeah, well, but the EU can impose regulations on them simply because they act independently of where their seat is.
Because they act in Europe.
Because they act in Europe.
Right.
And it says, if you want to organize your competitions in Europe, if you want to regulate our football players' contracts are in Europe, if you want to regulate football clubs in Europe, as they do, through directly and through UEFA and then the football associations, by the rules applied that day in that vertical hierarchical manner, if you want to do that, then you need to comply with these principles of governance, and you need to comply, for example, with the decisions of this independent agency that the European Union could set up. And there's a reason why those have been, famously in Bosman, the only decisions of public authorities that FIFA has effectively complied with is those of the European Union. If Ireland will try to apply a decision such as Bosman, for example, the judgment of the Court of Justice, if it had been decided by an Irish court, what FIFA will do is not comply with that and basically suspend all the Irish teams from its competitions. And Ireland will be forced into complying with FIFA rules. They've done that with many countries. For example, in Turkey, they've required Turkey to amend the constitution to prevent ordinary courts from deciding football disputes.
Right.
Under the pressure of excluding Turkey from its competitions. They don't do this, and they cannot do this with the European Union for a simple reason, because they cannot say, well, if the European Court of Justice decides this way, or if the European Commission decides this way, we exclude Ireland, Portugal, Spain, Germany, France, Italy. They can't. It's an example I use often to show it's an area where the European Union actually doesn't decrease the sovereignty of its member states. It actually reinstates that sovereignty over a transnational body that otherwise is not subject to any form of public regulation. So the EU is who has the power to effectively do it.
And that's available to listen back to now for full in your OTB Football podcast feed. Become a member and sign up at offtheball.com/join. That's about all we have time for on today's Football Daily. I'm Phil Egan, back with more tomorrow.
Off the Balls, Football Daily.
This is a free Off the Ball podcast. For access to the best in sporting analysis from the likes of Brian O'Driscoll, Andy Dunn, Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Tommy Walsh, Darren O'Sullivan, and lots more, become an Off the Ball member today.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.